Hello, 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 everyone. Let's do some lights here. It's nice to be with whoever happens to show up for this. It's the first one. I didn't market it. But what I did do is show up right here on LinkedIn Live. And I'm pretty excited about this because I've been taking off on Fridays since my daughter was born back in 2020. Used to be daddy-daughter day on Fridays. That was really cool. And then it became when she started going to school and my son was born, and now my wife is back to work. Now it's Daddy Danger Day. It's not actually his name. I wanted to make his middle name Danger. I just thought that would be so cool, but that got shot down. But I thought that was such a cool idea if I could make his middle name Danger. Just imagine for the rest of his life, he'd be like, my name, my middle name, Danger. Like, I just feel like that'd be so cool. I don't know. Maybe you get made fun of. Maybe you get beat up. But hopefully, I mean, he thought it would be cool. So today, this is the first one. And I'm waiting on... today, my guest is going to be Chris Lynn. So I'm just coordinating with him to try and get him in here. It's our first time doing this. So I'm going to try and make that happen. But today, we're going to... we have a kind of a loose agenda. This sort of thing is taking shape, but we decided that we were going to talk a little bit about layoffs and just like this whole world of layoffs that's happening right now. And specifically, like, what might it look like if it was different? What might it look like if, what might it look like if layoffs were people first? Oh, sweet. We got Chris here. Chris has arrived. Chris,
hey.
What's up, man?
I must have clicked on a wrong link or something, but
it's totally cool. You are here now. This is our first one. This is the first time we're doing this. I'm excited that I have these little windows when baby is napping where I can jump on and talk about stuff. And you and I put together this. I told you that I was thinking about doing these Friday lives, and I appreciate that you were game to just like jump on and talk about stuff.
Yeah, we just got to make it happen, man.
These are important
discussions, important topics that we got to talk about.
Yeah, and we did this a little while back. Some people may have caught it, may have missed it, but we did this with Anne, and I thought that was really cool. I got to connect with her. It's been a little long, but yeah, man. So I thought today, while I have a little bit of time while the baby's sleeping, I thought we would talk about this kind of world of layoffs. So like, what would layoffs look like in a better world? But before we get into all that, I mean, I don't feel like we need to like jump into this. It's our first time doing this. What's going on with you, man? How are you? How for the people that from your audience are joining in to see us talk, or the people from my audience that don't know you, like what's going on? Introduce yourself to maybe the people from my audience that don't know you.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Chris Lynn. I am a talent development leader in the L&D learning and development talent space. So ultimately what that means, right, is I go into organizations and help them build up their talent strategies and really look at how we can upskill those in their organization. I also am a huge advocate and proponent of leading people first and looking at how leadership affects the employee experience and how we can recenter the human experience at work. And so you can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram. It's Lead with Chris. You can find me on both of those platforms. And yeah, it's good to be here.
Good. See, this is like the sort of thing you learn on your first show. I got to get little graphics for you. I got to have like little things that pop up that are like your different, like, whatchamacallit, like your different links and places that people can get to you. I have some already like in my whole system, but they're not for you. So note to self after we get out of this, tasks for us to do is like put up our things so that the people that are watching can actually go and find that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this. I mean, we have kind of like a loose agenda of stuff to talk about, but before we get to it, like, I don't know if I've ever even asked you about this, but like, how did you get into learning and development? Like, how did that become a thing that you were drawn to? Like, what excites you about it? What excited you about it in the first place? Did you just fall into it? Like, how'd it happen?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, coming out of college, I went straight into Starbucks, getting my Starbucks MBA. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that means managing stores. And so my favorite part about running Starbucks stores was actually training people. Ensuring that they were ready to do the job. They knew what the standards were. They knew what the Starbucks story was, the why, all of that. And we can get into that topic another day, because I feel like Starbucks has kind of fallen off that North Star a little bit. But ultimately, it was about how do we set people up for success? And I, through the years, I ultimately found that that's been my why, is ensuring that people are set up for success, no matter what role they're in, no matter what their goals are, whatever their next career move may be. It's really about setting people up for success. And so after Starbucks, I went into a startup and they had no training processes in place. And I said, hey, you know what? Let me build these. Starbucks's training program was very tight, very well thought out. So let me take a stab at it. And I did well. And that ultimately led me on my journey to learning and development.
So it's interesting because, you know, every time we talk about something, I always notice how present it is for you, the people that you work with. But I heard something that you just said that I thought was really interesting that I don't think I've ever pieced together that's integral to learning and development, which is, you know, the fact that your story started at Starbucks, which I think is arguably one of the tightest brands out there in terms of brand consistency, brand experience, whether you're, you know, in a Starbucks in Hong Kong, in Germany, in Los Angeles, in Philadelphia, there is a certain consistency to the way that you expect things to go in a Starbucks. And I hadn't really considered, I'm a brand guy. Like I love talking about brand, thinking about brand. You even used one of my favorite terms, North Star, like this idea that there is something that we're all striving towards together. And I hadn't even really pieced together learning and development really as a function of making that brand real and making that brand experience real, because I think learning and development often gets lumped in and kind of like tossed over into HR's world. And they're like, people want to grow, so give them some educational experience, make some online courses, that'll keep people satisfied. But I think if you look at it both from you're helping enrich people and helping them grow, and that's one side of it. The other side that I hadn't even considered that you kind of just brought up indirectly is that it's also the pathway to making a brand experience consistent across all of your people. That learning and development is sort of the critical function there.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about when new hires get brought into any organization, right? I think a lot of us, if not all of us, have had the experience of, oh, you're here. Here's the work, and you just get thrown into the fire, and that's it. That's your onboarding experience. Really, that onboarding time, that orientation time, right? The orientation being like the first couple days, and then the onboarding being the longer period of time for you to integrate within the organization. That is so critical, because that's when you're learning the culture of the organization, the why, how you can align with the organization, both values, purpose, mission, how you can align your goals with the company's goals, how you can make an impact on the company's goals. A lot of those things end up driving engagement, which leads to higher productivity and profitability. So you're 100% right, is that L&D function is so often overlooked, and especially in the first week, month, 2-3 months of a new hire's time at a new company.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think there's a lot written about, and one of my favorite books is about the customer experience. It's called Never Lose a Customer Again. It's by Joey Coleman. Anybody out there hasn't read it, you should totally read it. But he really talks about the first 90 days of a client engagement and how there's this real disconnect between the sales process and then the onboarding experience, and how it often feels really great for the salesperson who just closed, and then really, you know, unnerving for the customer who just got tossed from the person that they knew into somebody that they don't know. And then, like, if you don't really craft that experience, you don't like map out your initial 90 days, that could be a very jarring experience. And I think the same thing is true to your point of bringing new people into an organization. It's like, if you don't really think about how those first 90 days are going to go, they might start having sort of buyer's remorse of like, do I really belong here? Is this my place? So I think that actually really dovetails nicely into what we had planned to talk about today, which was layoffs. And, you know, just this idea that there's this whole not even data-driven movement towards layoffs for the sake of profitability. Like, oh, we have to, you know, slash some of our overhead, cut the waste at the bottom so that we can maintain profitability. And a lot of these are companies with multi-billions of dollars in the bank. But they do this, and from the data, from what I've seen at least, it seems that that's not even a way to maintain, it's not even the best way to maintain profitability. And then you have this other side, which I think is what dovetails into what you said, which is you're spending all of this time onboarding people, trying to pick the right people. Then when you pick the right person that you think is the right fit for the organization, you bring them in, you train them, you try to get them through thick and thin to align with what the brand is doing, to get them to understand what their role is, how they fit in the company, how they can, you know, repeat and maintain and grow that company culture. And then you cut people. And all of a sudden you have to go through that process again. But then you also have the added weight of when you start hiring again, the people that are coming in now have that story of the layoffs that just happened. Like, can you imagine the people getting hired at Twitter right now? Like, what, like anybody that would be hired at Twitter from now on, like, what is their thought process when they just watched what, like 80% of the company that had been there just get wiped out in like 3 months? So talk to me a little bit about, in your experience, as someone who's worked in learning and development, what have you been able to see either in your experience or from what you're seeing looking out at the world right now? What do you think the impact is going to be on the growth and development of people, the retention, the loyalty, if we keep up with this way of, you know, rushing to the finish line using layoffs?
Yeah. So for those employees who are still around, there's multiple things happening mentally and emotionally. One is, because they were retained, there's going to be some sort of survivor's guilt that they're going to have to be going through. There's a level of organizational trauma that the company has now gone through, right? You just laid off, you know, even a quote unquote small number of like 5% is still a very large number when you take into the grand scheme of how many people that actually is. So there's that trauma. You also have the realignment of work. And what often companies do is when they say, oh, we let all of these people go, we need to realign on our work, that means, hey, for those of you who are still here, you get extra work. And then there's the mental state of mind that I like to always refer back to around Maslow's hierarchy of needs. When people are fearful of their financial situation, they fear that they may not be able to pay the bills, that all of a sudden decreases on the pyramid all the way down to the very first foundational level of physiological well-being. When you, as an organization, are threatening that of your employees, they may look at potentially not knowing if they're going to have a job tomorrow. I'm going to call out Salesforce here, because Salesforce is doing layoffs over the course of a whole month, which I have no idea why you would do that. Just make it happen, right? The whole company throughout that month, and most likely longer, and I have a couple friends who are there, they just say, we don't know what's happening. We don't know if our job's safe today, tomorrow, next week. When we fear for that safety, all of a sudden your productivity is the last thing on your mind, right? There are some people who will say, well, I'm going to double down on my work and work harder. But for most people, your morale, the stressors of that is going to negatively impact the productivity. So when you look at that from those who are still in the company, that's the impact. And all of a sudden, you can't grow, you can't learn, you can't do anything else because you're so fearful of what is happening. For those who got laid off, skill building is the last thing on your mind, right? Is because you are looking for that security again. You're looking to bring in that security that you once had. And that loss of identity is something that we don't talk about. Work is very often close to 50% of our lives, and definitely closer to, you know, 60, 70, 80% of our waking lives, right? And so all of a sudden that gets ripped away. You have no identity to now lean on, and you have to go and figure out what that next move is. And that doesn't often correlate with being able to upskill or learn something new.
So there's like massive ripple effects that happen on both sides of it. There's the people that didn't get let go. There's the people who are kind of, as you mentioned, in that sort of like on pause because they're not sure, because the layoffs are taking place, they're not sure if their number's getting called. But generally you have the sort of the people that were able to stick around, and then the people that got let go, and both of them are dealing with different states of fear for their most basic needs, whether or not they're the one that's going to be next with their number called, or they're the person who's out. Now they have to kind of claw back and try and get back what they may have lost. So there's massive impacts at the people level, both on the inside and on the outside. One of the things that I think we've seen a lot of by a lot, I mean, not in quantity, but in terms of the memorable moments of it, is when the leadership comes on and talks about how hard it was to, you don't know how hard it was for me to have to fire all of these people, and we're real people too, and it's so hard to have to fire all of these people. And I'm wondering if you just have any initial reactions to that sort of performative content that gets put out there, and whether or not you think there's any real benefit to that, whether there's authenticity to that, whether you think that it's just people being ignorant and not thinking. Like, do you have any sense or do you have any reaction to it? I'm not looking for you to back it with data, but just what's your take on that stuff? Because to me, it feels super, super ick.
Well, they have to say it, right? They have to. Think about the other side of that. The other option is if they don't say that. All of us.
That almost feels like it would be more like authentic. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like maybe, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
But, no, you're good.
But to your point of like, what's the alternative? I almost wish that they were just ruthless and honest about it. Because if that's what they actually are, right? Like, if the truth is we're cutting 5 to 10%, it's not actually going to affect our profitability. It's going to boost stock price temporarily. We're going to be able to make sure that a couple people that don't do any labor for this company make more money, but we're going to potentially ruin or absolutely negatively impact in some way 5% of our workforce. It would just be nice if they came out and just said, I don't care. Did you see how the stock price moved? Like, at least then I feel like I could respect that, like, you're just embracing it instead of pretending that you care. Because can you actually be people first if that's how you go about doing it?
Yeah, that's a good point, right? Is you, that is a third option, is you could either not say anything, you could feign, or maybe not feign, but maybe you really did care and are emotionally jarred about layoffs, or you can just not say anything. Or just come out and be ruthless about it and say, look, we had to make these cuts. And that's just the business side of it. I've been on the survivor side where a CEO has said, look, it was a business decision. And that is, for that organization that I was at, that was one of the worst things that you could say, was because they continuously preached in the culture that we care about people, we care about patients, we care about, you know, it was a healthcare organization. And so for them to say that immediately counteracted everything that the company was doing from a culture perspective and a values perspective. So that didn't make sense. So I think that there, from a executive level, there's a few things that they need to ponder and really say, hey, does this messaging contradict our existing brand, both internally as an employer and externally for customers? So there's that as well. Ultimately, what I would like to see is, you know, when we talk about accountability, that leaders actually are held accountable for the irresponsible decisions they've made that have led to these layoffs. And that may mean different things to different organizations, but I want them to understand the impact that they've had on these hundreds or thousands of people that they've suddenly let go. And what I would love to see is that they are one-on-one having these layoff conversations with those individuals. And then when they say, hey, we want to support them in their transition, as an executive, you better mean that. And that means, hey, I'm going to sit with you maybe one or two times over the next course of 3-6 months and see how you're doing. I'm going to check in on you. I'm going to see how you can leverage my network and if I can make any network connections for you.
Yeah, I'm with that 100%. And in my book, I talk a lot about like how to fire people properly and doing everything you can. And it's tough because there's no like right way to fire people in this system, because inevitably someone is harmed. Like, and you can't carry someone forever. And especially with smaller businesses, you can't carry someone for 2 to 5 years on your payroll after you've let them go just because, right? So we do have to kind of discuss like what's the alternative. One place I did want to pause though is on this idea of layoffs being a business decision. And then there's the idea of who gets let go, right? So we've seen in this round of layoffs that there are certain types of work that are being hit harder than others. A lot of DEI is getting cut. A lot of learning and development's getting cut. A lot of things that are about people and making, you know, people safer, healthier, happier at work are some of the first things to go. And I think part of this tends to get hidden behind this meritocracy myth, the idea that we're cutting the bottom 10%, or, you know, whatever their way of framing it might be. What's your take on the idea that these layoffs are generally conducted by looking at the numbers and who are the performers, and what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that I'll take this two ways. One is those internally who are doing the people work that don't have an impact, direct impact on revenue, and then the meritocracy myth. Those who get affected by doing the people work, by cutting those programs, by cutting those people, by eliminating DEI, talent development, learning and development, recruiting, though, by eliminating those functions of an organization, you're suddenly telling customers and your own existing or remaining employees that you don't care about those things enough to take care of your own people. And from even a client perspective, all of a sudden, you are looking at that organization and saying, hey, they are not upskilling their employees. How are they going to innovate for the future, right? So those are the things that a lot of organizations don't necessarily think about when they think about cutting people programs. And then again, as for future employees that may be looking at an organization, they don't care about their people well enough to grow them, to take care of them, to take care of their well-being. So there's all that whole thing. When you look at the meritocracy myth and looking at who is doing good work, again, it comes down to who is actually bringing in dollars for the business at a low cost. That is what they're measuring. They're looking at what is the dollar driver, not who's not doing great work. Software engineers aren't necessarily bringing in dollars, right? But we're seeing that a lot of employees and great employees are getting let go because they're just almost without any real thought, they're just saying, hey, you were the last one to come in. You're the first one to go out. And then when you take it from a diversity, equity, inclusion perspective, because of the diversity work that has been really pumped up in the last few years, they're bringing in more diverse talent. And because they're the last ones in, they also tend to be one of the first ones to go. And all of a sudden, you're DEI goals are out the window as well. So there's a lot to that really affects layoffs, and the meritocracy myth of doing good work has always been a myth, because when you look at things like performance reviews and engagement, that's always been a myth, and especially promotions, it's never been true. So it's really shining a light that do good work, you'll get rewarded is not, it's completely false.
Well, it's also, you know, when I think, and this is why I could never hold a job, because I cannot play in the politics of work. I have to work for myself. It's the only way that I mentally know how to survive and not completely fall apart. But when you look at what is being measured as performance, right? the person who shows up the earliest, the person who leaves the latest, but not necessarily the person who does the best work, right? The person who makes, who gets the best numbers, but maybe is poisonous and toxic to the rest of the team with their behavior. It could be the person who is willing to have their labor exploited the most. They're willing to take the lowest pay to do the most output versus the person who's doing really good work and is willing to set and erect, you know, real and reasonable boundaries. So I think we also have the issue of like, what are we rewarding and what are we looking for? And can we actually move towards a better long-term culture if we're just always going to cut people who are expendable because they are not bringing in the most money? They're not the most exploitable. They're the people who will fight for their actual boundaries. I'm reading a book right now called Laziness Does Not Exist by Devin Price. It's a really good book. If you haven't read it yet, strongly advise putting it on your list. But there's a part in the book where they talk about how, I forget what the name of the cyberloafing, that's the term. So it's the idea that people, you know, looking at Facebook or TikTok or YouTube or LinkedIn while on the job is like basically like company theft. You're doing it on company time, right? Not to talk about wage theft or labor exploitation or anything, but just specifically that you as an employee, if you take time not working, not being productive for 8 straight hours and you take that time, that you are lazy, you're stealing from the company, et cetera. But it turns out that studies have shown that people actually need that in order to be productive and effective at work. In the same way that you need bathroom breaks, in the same way that, you know, people need just a time to stop at the water cooler and talk to people. So it's that a lot of the standards that we use in corporate and in business to define what is successful and what is good are entirely around the values of what generates the most profit, and the most shareholder value, and the most profit flowing upwards. I just think that's really unfortunate. So I guess the question that always leads me to, and you and I feel like we can always like wax poetic about a better world, like what we would love. But when we bring in the constraints of this capitalist world that we lived in, where there is competition, there is the reality that if you spend more money on your people and taking care of your people, to a certain extent, the competitors who will exploit cheaper overseas labor or whatever and make it cheaper, faster, everything, can lower their prices, put you out of business, and win in the marketplace. How do we fix this trend of layoffs and make it people first? How do we think about our work differently to encourage leaders to see the value long-term in putting people first, as opposed to putting this quarter or this year's profits first, and what that may do long-term to their ability to hire the best talent, to keep and retain the best talent, to grow people, all those sorts of things? What's your take on what we can realistically do there that'll convince that hardcore capitalist CEO that has to answer to shareholders? How do we do it?
Well,
big question, by the way.
Huge question.
Like,
huge
question. Do your best to fix it all.
Yeah. But, we need to measure different things ultimately, right? Wall Street measures based on, you know, reducing cost, increasing revenue, top line revenue, profitability, and whatever other factors that they look at. What they don't see, and what we don't publicly acknowledge or see or report on or hold executives to, are the things that lead up to that profitability, that lead up to increasing revenue, that lead up to decreasing cost. And so those are the people areas that we can really focus on. And by measuring those, then we can start looking at profitability and those other things. And so what I mean by that is, how are you aligning, how well aligned do employees feel between their own goals and the company's strategic goals? How are you increasing a specific skill set within roles that will drive innovation or drive growth in revenue, right? So by looking at those people measurements, then we know that they lead to additional things that Wall Street is measuring. And we really need to shift how we're looking at those things, because those will ultimately, I think, lead to change, right? When we've looked at diversity, equity, inclusion, for example, over the last few years, it really has been about, well, how are you going to hold executives accountable? Well, they don't get bonuses unless they start raising their diversity numbers. They don't get raises if their inclusion and belonging metrics are low, things like that. So if you start holding the executives accountable to those people measures, and you affect what they care about, which is ultimately everyone cares about what their take home is, that's when we can start really moving the needle.
I would love to see it, you know, just as an example. You know, I saw Mark Zuckerberg get up there and talk about his strategic failures of basically like blowing $10 billion on Meta and his whole silly metaverse concept. And he stood up there and said, I take accountability for that. And I was like, you're not taking accountability for anything. I would love to see a situation where when you lay off 10,000 people, 11,000 people, that you as the CEO that is holding $60 billion worth of shares in your company, you should give them your, not all of your shares, but you should, the people that are laid off should get from your shares, because that's going to make you think more responsibly about the sort of things that you're going to take strategic risks on and how you can go about not letting someone go. You know, because at the end of the day, Mark Zuckerberg will be fine. No matter how many people he lays off, he could close up Meta tomorrow and cash out, and he would be fine for the rest of his life. But all of the people that work there, the thousands upon thousands, possibly, I'm not even sure, it might be hundreds of thousands at this point, employees that work it there, they're all going to be negatively affected. Some will get out with golden parachutes, or, you know, they'll be at a certain level where they might be fine, or they'll go to competitors. But the bottom line is that when people are brought on, sometimes they move their family, they take these jobs, and then they're let go. And a CEO stands up there and says, I take accountability, but doesn't do anything to actually share in the harm that is caused from their decisions and actions. I don't understand how that's actually accountability. They're empty words to me. So in my world, I think the best way we can move towards people first is by flattening organizations first and foremost, to reduce the disparity of wealth and income between the highest and lowest paid employees. But also, if we're going to have real accountability metrics, I think that's a thing that needs to happen where, you know, if you're going to hire someone, you need to really be thoughtful about that decision over a much longer time period. And you need to think, when you're letting them go, how to make sure that your actions and your bad decisions are not causing them harm while you walk away without any issues. I mean, look at this Norfolk Southern, the whole thing out in East Palestine with the environmental disaster. They've offered $25,000 total, from what I understand, for the entire, that's $5 per resident for the cleanup, right? And it's potentially one of the greatest environmental catastrophes in our country's history. That's the sort of thing where it's like, that's a CEO that's being just emboldenedly villainous, but there's no accountability there. And really, that's the sort of situation I would like to see, where those decisions where you cut corners and where you harm people, it should come out of your pocket. You should be held either criminally or civilly liable for those issues. That's my take on it. I'm pretty hardcore.
I mean, I think that's a great idea. Ultimately, what will move that will require some, I think, very strict regulation. That would be a very steep uphill battle that we would be fighting. But you're right, right? If you and I are in a job and we mess up, we get put on a performance improvement plan, we get fired, right? This is not happening at the executive level. Yeah. So we need to find another way to hold those executives accountable. That may mean regulation, depending on which side of the political spectrum you may sit on. You may or may not like that. But there is an important piece to that. I think something else that, you know, we don't think about is, you brought up the harm done to communities. I think so many, especially here in Silicon Valley and the San Francisco Bay Area, they were given tax breaks to come in to these cities and into these areas and build up their headquarters. Suddenly, when they're causing layoffs or causing harm to the community that they've now already harmed because of this sudden influx of employees and their families, and you are now pushing out residents due to costs, things like that. But beyond that, because you've gotten these tax breaks, those things should be not just without consequence, yeah. Right? Is all of a sudden, if you're laying off these people who are local, especially, I think some of those things need to be taken away. I also don't believe in those tax breaks.
100%, yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of things that we need to fix in the system. And then when we talk about things that are systemic, like these are the things that are systemic, is we allow these things to continually move forward and giving tax breaks and not holding people accountable. The other thing I wanted to bring up really quickly is that there was a recent article in Time Magazine that showed the disparity of CEO income in 2022 and the and how they were inequitable in providing, or how inequitable a CEO's pay is in relation to their company's performance. And it very clearly called out the top 10 most inequitable companies based on CEO pay, shareholder performance, and the disparity between CEO pay and average employer pay or lowest employee pay. So that's something very interesting to look into as well, is if you want to see how bad this is, that article really clearly highlights just how much inequity there is within an organization.
Yeah, man, I got to get a copy of that from you. I love looking at that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
I love being knowledgeable about what's going on there. Well, listen, man, we've been chatting for about a half an hour now. I think that's probably a good point on our very first one to call it a day. But I love talking with you, man. I always love going through what's going on in the world, trying to envision solutions to things, talking through, and really continually trying to make people back at the center of the story. And I think that's something that we lose a lot of times when we talk in business and you read articles in Forbes and you this and you that. We talk about business as something that's sterile, that's removed from people, that can exist as this layer kind of separate from. And I just don't think that that's true. And I think the work that you do and the drums that you beat and the posts that you put out there and the things that you advocate for are exactly the things that resonate with me. And I'm a firm believer that we have to keep recentering people in these conversations. Because the only way we might be able to move forward and find a better business environment is if we continually do that and we start to make a better world for everyone. So I think that we 100%. Can do that. So I don't know, man, maybe more baby nap times, more Fridays, and enough people tuning in and listening either live or after the fact, maybe we'll get there. But thanks for coming on. I want to, before we turn off the stream and everything, I want to give you a chance, to do something that I know that you never do. I know you never do this. So I'm going to put you on the spot and make you do something that I know you hate doing. I want you to promote yourself right now. Tell people about you. Tell them about where you are in life right now, what you're looking to do, who you're looking to meet, what you're working on, what your ambitions are. Like, do the thing that is so difficult to drag out of you just for me on this first live. I'll never ask you to do it again quite like this, but it's our first live. So I'm putting you on the spot to do this thing that both of us actually hate this, but I know you hate it because we just talked about it, but promote yourself. Tell people all about you, where they can connect with you, what sort of people they can introduce you to, who you're looking to meet, all that stuff. Go do it.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, this is, as Jeff said, really tough for me to do. However, I am at that point where I do need to promote myself a bit more. So Jeff, thank you for forcing it out of me and putting me over the cliff edge with maybe a parachute or maybe just an empty backpack. But again, I'm focused on the talent development space. I am one of the hundreds of thousands at this point who have been affected by layoffs. And so I am looking for my next full-time role in talent and development. I have a decade's worth of experience. So if you know any organizations that are a people first organization and really focused on building up their talent organizations or talent function within the company, I would love an introduction. You can find me on LinkedIn, Lead with Chris. Again, you can also find me on Instagram, Lead with Chris, just how it sounds, Lead with Chris. And yeah, if you have any questions or want to connect, feel free to reach out on LinkedIn. I'm always available. And again, I'm really focus on creating a stronger people first culture through the employee experience and talent development. Oh, that was painful. Take the knife out, please.
You want me? Okay. I got you. Well, I'm going to do the thing where I'm just going to layer on just another layer of it and just say that, you know, for those that are in my network who don't know Chris yet, you should know Chris. Go and connect with Chris on LinkedIn. Follow his posts. You will very quickly see why he's someone that I strongly encourage that you follow, and you can learn so much from. If you have an amazing company, please do not sleep on the opportunity to talk to Chris. I would love to see you in the exact right place where, you know, it's a culture and an organization that will respect your gifts and the things that you bring to the table and the way you are with people, which is truly the most unique thing about you. You have a way about you. I knew it from the first day that you and I got connected. I can't remember through who. It might have been through Kathy Clote's guest. It might have been through Yvonne. I don't remember the order of things, but I just now know that you're a part of my world, and I'm really appreciative for that. So, you know, all my people out there, make Chris part of your network too. He's amazing. So that's the end of the first nap time. I was planning to check out this cool graphic I had. I didn't even put it up. I meant to put this up like right at the beginning, but check this out. I had this. Look at that. Look how cool that is. I made that.
Perfect.
I mean, I made that. Look at that. Look at that. I did that. Me. Anywho, I meant to put that up. I didn't. I'll do that on the next one. But I got some things to say on the way out. I wrote these down. I will try to remember this next time, but this is my first time. I'm just going to read it for you. But thanks for tuning in with us, whether you were live or you listened or watched it after the fact. Make sure to follow me on LinkedIn and subscribe to me on YouTube if you want to catch this show live, or just subscribe on Apple Podcasts. I'm currently deciding whether or not I want to make this part of Shareable, or I want to make it its own separate thing called like the Friday Nap Time show. I don't know yet. I'll decide by the time.
We'll figure it out.
I decide. Anyway, thank you for all of your attention and or feedback. It means a lot to me. And I will see you next week when the baby is napping, because this is the nap show. I'm off on Fridays. I just watched the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. It was decent. Not a lot of Chris Pratt, which is great in my book. Not a huge fan. Not a huge fan of Guardians of the Galaxy in general, but it was entertaining. And I got to spend some time with my son just reading books, and he's 4 months old. He doesn't do much. But anyway, I'll be back every Friday when he's napping, hopefully, as long as nothing else wild is going on. And, you know, Chris, I'm hoping that you join me for a great number of them so that we can keep being out there and hopefully making the world more people first and more awesome.
100%. Thanks for having me, and looking forward to the next one.
Peace out, everyone.
See ya.
Check this out. That's how I'm ending it.
Love it.